The Ben Davis and Kelly K Show podcast on demand.
Hey, what up? It's Ben Davis, operations manager, format captain, morning co-host at 99.7 DJX. And I want to continue the important conversation of United for Justice. And with me, I wanted to bring into the conversation a roundtable discussion of some of my coworkers from B96 and Magic 101.3. So first off, I want to say good morning to content director and mixer DJ Q at B96.
Good morning. How you doing, Ben?
I shouldn't even say good morning. There is no time here. We have Bella Ray.
Hi.
Bella Ray. We have Marlise, the church lady Woods.
Hello.
And Magic 101.3's Easy Bluegrass.
Hello. Hello.
Okay, so I wanted to bring you all together to just kind of have a frank and honest conversation. You all know me. I all know you. I think we can be comfortable enough to get a little uncomfortable maybe and really kind of understand what's happening, why it's happening. I want to, you know, dive into topics of Black Lives Matter, white privilege, relationship with the police, racism, and, you know, kind of where we go from here and all of that. So I guess let me just kind of toss out Black Lives Matter. Should I start there? Like, what does it mean?
I take it in reference to the relationship between police and police brutality and black citizens. When they say Black Lives Matter, we're saying that our lives get taken at a more harsher treatment. Like, for instance, I hear a lot of cops as a culture that I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Well, that really pertains when it comes, in my opinion, when they police black lives. So if there's any type of sketchy intercourse between police, if things go bad in any way, or if they feel threatened, they do not hesitate to be harsh and deadly with us if our life doesn't matter. And if they're wrong, it's like, oops, my bad, I was wrong. But everyone forgives them. They may not even get fired. They may not even get no charges. And it seems to happen at such a high rate as if our lives do not matter. They'd rather be thorough than get the bad guy than do the due diligence and follow all procedures. So it seems like it's heinous to a point, as if our lives doesn't matter. So that's my interpretation of Black Lives Matter. When we say our lives matter, that means we matter to do your due diligence when you handle us like you handle everybody else. Don't cut any corners. Don't act any more scared. Don't be any more harsher. Treat us like it's a precious life, like we want to make it home too, not just to make it home.
I would say that explaining it to someone that doesn't really understand, you know, I hate to hear the rebuttal of, well, all lives matter. Mm-hmm. This is true that all lives do matter. But at this time, at this moment in time, with the scope of how everything is with society and how explosive everything is, now everyone is stepping up and it's being noticed now nationally. It's not to say that all lives don't matter. But if you look at the scope of, remember when everyone was Save the Whales? Is all about the whales. The whales are in trouble. The whales, the whales, the whales. And no one screamed, well, what about the dolphins? What about the starfish? What about the rest of the sea life? It wasn't about what about the rest of sea life. It was about the whales. So this is, it's a perfect example. Right now, it's all
it's
about black.
Example.
Yeah, it's Black Lives Matter. We need to focus on this, and we need to fix this right now.
This is DJ Q. I don't think that it's separating us as a race. I think when people say it, it's a cry for help because we don't get recognized for our contributions to civilization here in America. And, you know, we need people to recognize that, don't just see us and our contributions as being sports and entertainment, but recognize we are a part of this country. We fought for this country. We helped build this country. Mm-hmm. And we need to be recognized for that. You know, mm-hmm. when a lot of times when you look in our history books and America's talked about, you see a lot of white faces. You see, and a lot of, even within that, there are cultural mentions of, you know, someone's heritage, maybe being German, maybe being Irish, maybe being European. But at the same time, you know, when it comes to Black history, you hear about Martin Luther King, and our history is so much deeper than Martin Luther King, you know. And as far as like our contributions, you know, I think once people realize what we have done and sacrificed within the country, and it's taught that way, then we'll get that respect. That's why we say education is the key, because a lot of people don't realize how deep rooted our history is, for one, because a lot of it's been erased and not told purposely. But aside from that, this cry for help came out of police brutality. And the sad part of that is the history goes back to, you know, the original origins of the police, the slave patrols, and things like that. So for us, there's always been that fear. Their story is the story at the end of the day, and we still don't have that voice that's heard. So for us, Black Lives Matter is a statement that's a cry for help and saying, hey, we're here. We need you to stand with us. Because to me, this topic in particular, I hate that it gets looked at and judged as if it's a game. But the world sees us as the most profitable country, but yet and still we're diverse and not united. So we have this false image of we're this great country, but we're really divided in so many ways.
We're tired of the same narrative. We're over the same narrative of the police brutality and nothing happening. That's where we come and we try to make that stand, the whole Black Lives Matter. So when he said that it's not a gang, like Q was saying, it's not a gang. It's just more of a, we're just trying to make our statement with Black Lives Matter.
You know, it's really disheartening to see, even with Colin Kaepernick, people, I want to say they acted like they didn't get it. Do you not see for over the last, even going back to Rodney King, we've had video.
Yeah.
We've been having video, we've had audio, and you're telling me you don't realize why people are upset? I mean, not as just African Americans, but just as human beings. People are being murdered at the hands of our protectors, quote unquote. And you don't understand why people are upset. That's frustrating. That's more frustrating than anything, for people to say, I don't understand why people are so upset, or why now? What is this all about?
It's been building. It's been building for years and years. So this was just finally the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, Marlise, I heard it equated, especially with, you know, Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, they were the gasoline that kind of fell on the fire that was already burning. And there's so much more deeper discussion than just police relationship with the African-American community. And I think this movement is really bringing to light everything. And I guess I want to ask, by first telling you what I thought when I heard white privilege. I thought when I heard white privilege, it was like, oh, you are a rich, suburban, white guy who, you know, doesn't have any issues. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I didn't grow up rich, you know, and so I equated money to that somehow. And I'm almost embarrassed to say this. I mean, it took this movement and this, you know, the past 4 weeks for me to really listen and educate myself and watch what was happening and think, okay, I understand a little bit more that just because I'm a pasty, white, freckled guy with red hair, that I am getting I'm getting opportunities in a way that I didn't know before. I guess expand on it from your point of view, what the term white privilege means.
You hit the nail right on the head where I've had discussions with people as well, thinking that white privilege had to do with wealth. I've had to work for everything. I work just as hard as you and blah, blah, blah. But white privilege has nothing to do with wealth. It has nothing to do with money at all. And it does have to do with, I mean, you could be homeless and broke and still have white privilege just because of the color of your skin. You're not treated as harshly by law enforcement, or there could be situations with employment where I could have the degrees, more experience, more tenure, and I'm passed up for a job simply because you may not be the right look that we want for the company in that role.
Mm-hmm.
But Jimmy, that, you know, has less tenure, less experience or whatnot, but he's up and coming, we're going to give it to him because mm-hmm. whatever. So that's, in my perspective, what white privilege is.
If I can expand on what Marlies just said, pretty much benefit of doubt that a white person is more likely to get from anyone in charge, whether we're talking about law enforcement or when you're in conflict with anybody, it can be in the workplace or just dealing with anybody in power. It's a benefit of doubt that the status quo of this country's history has allotted you over an average black person. Now, when it comes to just, the workplace in specific, it's situation by situation. And the privilege that I would say a white person get is that if you have the complexion for protection, you can easily get it just based upon image.
Just the way you can even communicate with the person. Like, I've seen it with my own two eyes where someone would say something like white privilege to me is where somebody can say something to somebody and I'm like, I could never get away with saying that. I would be like, you're done. Like, call me into the office if I was to ever say something like that in, like, I have to watch how I say things in email.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I have to make sure I'm watching how I'm speaking just in general to people. And that's because of the whole fear of, I don't want someone to think that, oh, I'm the angry black girl in any email. Or if you're just the real sassy one, you don't want to be, you almost don't want that type of stereotype.
Mm-hmm. I read something or I heard something the other day. It's like, but you had Obama. You had Obama for 8 years. You know, he broke the glass ceiling and he reached the pinnacle of, you know, government and the highest level in America. What was interesting is that is unfair to the African American community because that isn't the norm.
A lot of black people don't feel like they benefited by him being in office. As an image, yes, it was a good look. And there are people that benefited.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, that's not love. I mean, that's like saying you have, and this may be a bad analogy, but just what comes to mind is just like when you feed your dog dry dog food and then you give him the canned wet dog food and he goes crazy. You should be happy that one time.
Mm-hmm.
No, show me love. Like, treat me like you really want to help me and
every
help
day.
Me grow. Yeah, help me all the time. You know, don't say, you know, that's beneficial to me because more than likely it's not. and truth be told, don't do me a favor. Just show me love. Like, walk with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grow with me. So, yes, I've heard that comment been said before, saying, you know, well, you guys had Obama, you know, this and that. But at the same time, the same way that this country has two political parties, they have two political parties for a reason, because we all don't have the same beliefs.
Right.
So even as black people, we all don't believe in the same things.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we may have the same cause, mm-hmm. but at the same time, we don't all believe and have the same things that we believe in. So, you know, with him being in office, a lot of that money doesn't trickle down to the lower economic neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it made us feel like there was progress as a diverse country.
Yeah.
But as far as us getting along in our social everyday lives, there wasn't really any progression.
Mm-hmm.
If he had have started doing certain things for the African-American community, that would have been taken as racist.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Favoritism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he tried to walk a fine line, but of course, I mean, he's going to get it from both sides, whether you're, you know, African American, white, whatever. And then you even heard the argument while he was in office that, hey, you know, Obama's half white too. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, like, you guys can't have all of them, you know?
Easy bluegrass.
What he was a symbol. What I take him as the greatest thing about his whole term that he had, the terms that he had, he represents once and for all as an example to all African American youth or any immigrant or just minority in general. If you do the right thing, you have the right education, you have a clean record, a nice, wholesome image, you can rise to the top. Obama is extremely exceptional. He was a Harvard graduate.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in office in the toughest city And America had an office with the toughest families. Mm-hmm. He had to win on so many levels to even be considered. So going back to the whole privilege talk is, if you're black and you're exceptional, the world can be your oyster. Mm-hmm. But if you're white, you don't have to be exceptional necessarily. You just have to be consistent. Consistent is exceptional when you're white. When you're black, consistent is consistent. See you on Monday at the register. My opinion, don't quote me on everything, but that is my interpretation of privilege. Just and how the whole Obama is the washing of all way of all racism. This is not accurate.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's so difficult to change? You know, we're dealing with racial injustice and it's a human rights issue. Why is it so hard to make this shift?
And a lot of these urban cities, you have a lot of urban and minority people that are wealthy and have a lot of money. Like you go to Washington, D.C., those are some of the most professional, highest paid African-Americans that you see in the country. You know, you may go to another city and you may see an Asian race that or should I say citizens that make a lot of money and is predominantly Asian. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And then when you come to the Midwest, which, you know, back in the, you know, throughout the 1900s was, you know, big for manufacturing and factories and things of that nature. You know, a lot of these more rural areas, as they're starting to see change and it's coming closer and closer and closer to areas where it wasn't before, people may not be ready for that. You know, I don't know why the change is such. We've always been a part of history, you know, but at the same time, as things are changing and developing, I don't think a lot of people are ready for that change. Now, what that change is, I don't know if it's maybe more people being pushed out to certain areas. I mean, over the last 10, 15 years, a lot of urban areas and projects have been torn down, and there's a lot of more people mm-hmm. moving out to areas that they typically weren't at yeah. one point in time. And we do know, especially in Louisville particularly, there was a lot of redlining going on. You know, there's a history of that.
Explain what that is real quick. For
basically, where a real estate agent will basically push, let's say, a white home buyer mm-hmm. to not want to be in a particular neighborhood or try to suggest they stay in a particular area to mm-hmm. keep out other minorities. Mm-hmm. You know, tell them this is the good school over here, or mm-hmm. here's the good shopping area for you. You might want to live in this area.
Or this zip code.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and we know, you know, public schools are funded by property tax, and mm-hmm. so, you know, the higher the property tax, the more taxes are paid in, the usually the more activities, the more functionality, the better the school system it is. So it all plays into a bigger picture of what has happened in America for the past 200 years and how cities are set up and how, you know, I'm sure you don't grow up and wish, wow, you know what? My dream is to live in the projects. You know, that's right. That's not a dream I could say, I think with confidence, a lot of people would make, you know, and then the argument is, well, why don't you just get a job and get out of the projects? Well, I mean, yeah. and right. that again goes back to, you know, the whole issue on white privilege and being able to have those same opportunities for mm-hmm. career, for education that someone 10 miles away has.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, we all know where it's at here, right here in our city. Like, redlining started 9th Street exit.
Don't go past right. Yeah. Don't yeah. go right.
Mm-hmm. And I could imagine that growing up in, you know, the West End, Portland neighborhood, California neighborhood, whatever, Russell neighborhood, that you hear all your life, like, oh, I don't go West and Ninth. Oh, Ninth, you know, that's mm-hmm. got to have a psychological effect on you. Mm-hmm. I've been guilty of that where I'm like, oh, you know, we don't go West and Ninth. You know, mm-hmm. just jokingly, like not really thinking that statement had any sort of weight or implication to it, mm-hmm. but I'm putting myself on a better plane by not living over there or growing up in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Than the people that are living there, and like little kids growing up and whatever, they hear that, you know, that has an effect on them.
Sure.
So yeah, I want to talk about the relationship with, you know, the police department. I'll kick it off by talking about the last time I got pulled over. just as an example. I was on I-65 coming from Chicago back down to Louisville. I was in the right lane. I saw a police flip his lights on. I pulled over, you know, and I got my family in the car. It's our minivan. The police walks up, you know, I unroll the window, ask him what's going on. And he told me that my license plate was not visible. Don't worry. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to give you a warning this time. You should be able to take your license plate, you know, to the DMV and they should be able to replace it for you. But just make sure that, you know, you take this warning with you when you go and, you know, you can get that checked out. All right. You know, have a good day, sir. You know, we'll see you later. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, great. You know, my heart was thumping and everything because, you know, I'm pulling over and I'm like, I don't think I was speeding, or I was speeding the normal speeding that people do. Like, you know, if you're on 65 and it's 70 miles an hour, you're going maybe 72, 73, something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my daughters are in the back seat going, oh my gosh, dad's getting arrested. You know, they have no idea what's happening. And so that was the last time I got pulled over. And that was probably about 6 months ago. And since I got my license plate taken care of, and here we are. I would like for you to share, if you would, an experience that you may have had with the police.
I think we've all been raised in coming up. If you encounter the police, mm-hmm. you be quiet. You don't say anything. You don't offer any additional information unless you're asked. Historically, watching videos and, you know, everything is out there. Everything is just public now. Everybody has cell phones. So we've seen situations where people were calm when they were pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
The officer was aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Whose car is this? License and registration and overly asking for things that normally wouldn't be asked of possibly a white counterpart. I think there's an inbred fear that Black people have when we encounter the police. And like I said, we grew up with our parents telling us that, so it's almost embedded in us.
Mm-hmm.
I have a daughter, and maybe I'm the exception because my husband is a retired police and so forth, so she doesn't necessarily have to have that talk
mm-hmm.
from me. But my husband has had that talk with his sons if they encounter, you know, because he knows, you know, from just working in the department. Not everybody in the police or in his department were his friends.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that there were just some that were just, you know.
Yeah.
I think that now, as just being a mom of boys,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's a little different. Like, now we have to tell them, you know, when you get pulled over. Like, I've had to watch my boyfriend have these conversations with his nephew, and it's like, when you get pulled over, make sure you keep your hands on the steering wheel. You tell the police officer, you know, if you need to move your hand, it's just in case, you know, you don't want them to think that you're reaching for something. Every time you need to reach for your registration or you need to reach for your ID, you need to reach for something, tell them
what you're
reaching for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like those are real things that we have to tell boys now. Mm-hmm. Or even we still got to tell girls too, because now, I mean, with everything that happened with the Sandra Bland and everything else that happened,
mm-hmm.
we have to tell our girls that too.
My experiences has evolved and changed as I evolved and changed. Like, anyone who knows me knows I'm a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was young, I got a totally different treatment and energy from cops than I do now. And I've never been arrested, never been booked, but I've been pulled over numerous times. Now, in my more recent times, with my more recent look, which is now seasoned, I got the salt and pepper look, a little dead body, dead look, dead energy, normal police conversation, normal interaction. If I'm speeding, I get a ticket. If I'm not, just a warning. I'm almost never searched. But when I was in my 20s, cornrow E, dreadlock E,
mm-hmm.
I got the business. My opinion and what I've observed through my own experiences, I know who they are hunting. They want that hip kid. They want that kid that looks like, for lack of a better expression, you look like a thug. You look like a street guy, a drug dealer. And all you're doing is wearing your cool Christmas clothes that your mama got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
You're going out.
Yeah.
Of course I'm listening to my music. I'm on my way to Kohl's.
Mm-hmm.
I got it turned up. I got it paid. I just got paid. It's Friday night. I'm ready to party. But you don't get the business. And when they pull you over, they profile you, it goes where it goes. One bad move, one sarcastic comment, one flinch of the hands, like Bella said, one reach the wrong way, it goes where it goes. So that has been my experience. But as I became a dad, with my dad look and my dad body and my dad clothes, they don't want me. They just tell me what's going on, and they let me go about my way.
So do you think appearance is a big part of it?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're profiled like you would not believe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is, but you should also know your surroundings and your whereabouts. I mean, there's actually a book out called Sundown Towns.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a lot of people that may not be familiar, pretty much it's like when the sun goes down, you better not be around.
Mm-hmm.
And that applied to a lot of African Americans, past and present. And so when you drive through those areas, you just kind of got to know your surroundings. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't try to enforce your rights as an American citizen and go get gas or go use the restroom, but don't put yourself in harm's way either.
Yeah.
How do we change the police culture? There are a lot of cases, you know, that are getting a national attention here locally, Breonna Taylor and David McCaddy, and you know, you see the term defund the police, and I think it scares a lot of people. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, I mean, we need police.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have thoughts on how we move forward?
I was thinking, it's funny, this is something I've been working on. What I quit was 8 points of reform. One, we got to correct the culture the police have that their lives are more important than the people that they're policing. We want cops to make it home. We want them to be safe. We recognize this is potentially the toughest job in civilization. But the whole, I'd rather be judged by 12-6, that's the guy that stops. And what it does, it puts their lives on the pedestal and makes everyone else, or it could potentially, the idea that other people are disposable.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I feel, since this is a tough job, I'm asking them to do 100% procedure. I say they deserve a raise. We raise taxes to do city landscaping. Why not raise taxes to give these police the payment that they deserve to do the toughest job that we're asking them to do? Because I want it done right, to a T, and I'm willing to pay for that. That's just me speaking. I say number three, give them something to lose. For example, if the police had a certain pension year to where they get pension, if that once they reach that year, if their kids got to go to college for free, that gives them an incentive to do their job right and not to lose that job. I just want to give them a incentive that's something to lose other than their freedom of their job, because obviously that's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind giving a little bit to receive more. Number four, I want the punishments when they do it wrong to be federal. Number five, I want it to be federal with these cameras. I want it to be federal that you have to have your camera on. I want the police body cameras to cut on when they clock in and clock out, so it just notice us. And if you're police and you're at work and you don't have your camera on and you're caught doing it or something comes up, that is a federal law. Now, I'm not saying give them a million years, but I want that to be a serious law. Body cameras, this is a must, because that's the only thing that's really made these times more powerful than the civil rights times, or at least the interest level, is because we got things on tape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number six, I want thorough background checks for cadets. But like, if you have anything on your social media in your past when you was 18, even if you use a high school that was somewhat racist, you Confederate flag hired to be in the police mm-hmm. industry. I want them to scrub the background checks. All right. Number seven, I want special endorsements to police in certain populations. Like if you're a truck driver and you want to drive a truck that carries livestock, you have to have a special endorsement for that. Your regular CDL will not cover that. If you want to drive a truck that has hazardous chemicals on it, like gasoline, you need a special endorsement. How this relates to police, if you want a police community that's as big as Chicago with all that diversity, you have to have a special endorsement and the special training to handle that population, that environment you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So you are sensitive enough, you're not scared to death, you're not jumpy. So I want them to be prepared and trained for the environment. And last but not least, I would like, and this is number eight, end police quotas. A lot of police arrests is done by quotas, like their funding, their salaries, the hours they get, the equipment they get, it goes by quotas. This is something you may notice towards the end of certain months, police may pull over more people than they do all month long because they haven't reached their quota yet. If they're not making a certain amount of interactions or arrests, they may get defunded. Well, I think that gives them a sense of to even cross paths with a lot of people because they're just trying to reach a quota. We got to end these police quotas. I think it's a bad idea. and it puts pressure on them to be more itchy to even pull people over, which lead to more interactions with people who don't even need to be interacted with. So I believe reform is the answer, not necessarily defunding the police. I told you two of my points, actually give to them. I want to give them raises. I want to give them incentive because they seem to be so family driven. Non-police and military are family, family, family. I want to make it back to my family. But I'm willing to invest in them to get it done correctly, because I'm asking you to second guess yourself. I'm asking you to pause for a second before you pull that gun and shoot. I'm asking you to be thorough with all your procedures, treat everybody fairly. And for to get 100% return on the investment I'm making, it is worth it to me. And I'm willing to do that because, like I said, we pay extra money in taxes to build bridges and to build YUM centers. I'd rather spend that money on proper policemen.
Thank you.
Very good. I would add that, you know, there are many good police on the force, but when the bad ones do wrong, they're part of a brotherhood. They're all part of a brotherhood. And so I would encourage that when you see dirt being done, have the ability to tell someone or confide. That's like going to HR.
Yeah.
You know, anything that you say to me is between you and I, and then HR will deal with it.
Yeah.
So make it so that they are comfortable enough to have someone to go to report to if something is being done that they don't agree with, so that it can be addressed.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't know that they have that now, but I know that there is a certain brotherhood in there, and mm-hmm. they stand together. You may not necessarily agree with the way, you know, your counterpart deals with the public in arrest and ticketing and all of that, and you're not comfortable with it, but you're not going to say anything, you know, because, you know, you the two of you are in it. If it's your partner, the two of you are in it together. So, yeah.
I'll end with saying that I don't know what it's going to take to get to equality, but that's ultimately what we want. You know, we want equality. You know, you've been hearing a lot the last couple of weeks about systemic racism and what a lot of the urban or African-American community feels is that factions or organizations, there is an unequal effort to be on the same playing field. Until people feel that they are given the same opportunity, even if they're qualified, people are going to feel that there's going to be a disadvantage or their voice is not being heard. So I don't know what it's going to take, but I think that's the big question and the biggest fight of all of this. Because, I mean, outside of, yes, Black lives do matter, but we want to make sure that we're standing next to people that believe that and that this country believes that, because we've been fighting this from day one and we're still fighting it. And we may be fighting it until nobody on this earth is here anymore. But at the end of the day, we want people to recognize and admit and know that this is a problem, mm-hmm. and let's try to fix it, you know, because a lot of these organizations are coming out now and want to protect their integrity, but protect their money, because there's so much influence from the urban community, and there's people that work within that business, and you don't want to stand out and look like you're not being a contribution to a solution.
Bella Ray?
When you talk about the police department, first of all, because I have to say that I have family members that are police as well, because I know that there are good cops. Okay, let's start there. And I know that there are terrible cops. Okay, so where do we go from here? We even need to figure out, like, or we can even look at the officer in the Breonna Taylor case. While he's in the department, he still was able to have everything put on his record while he's on the police force. So at what point do we, in the police force, do we say, okay, you gotta go? When do we fire those people? When do we fire those bad cops? How do we fire those bad cops?
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing when it comes to that. So we can change out police officers, but we got to fire the bad one. We got to get them out. We got to weed them out. But also, where do we go from here? It starts there. Like, it starts with us learning to be able to trust the people that are supposed to protect us. Like, how do we get it back together?
Mm-hmm.
So there is, if I feel like there's like a long line things we would have to do to get everything back organized, to get everything back together, honestly.
Well, voting.
Oh, vote. Hello. Please go vote.
That's a way to affect change is by mm-hmm. voting, you know, people and policies, you know, into decision-making roles that mm-hmm. will help even the playing field. And that's what we're trying to do. You know, I know a lot of businesses have over the past several weeks been releasing their statements condemning racism and things like that. And now recently we've started to see some of those businesses actually like put pen to paper and okay, you know, Aunt Jemima, you know, we're going to step away from that marketing and we're going to start removing some Confederate statues and we're going to donate money to, you know, the NAACP or, you know, they're actually starting to activate and move things forward. And I think that is
the movement is there. Mm-hmm. I think the point is that it needs to continue. And I'm all about the peaceful protesters, mm-hmm. you know, the peaceful marches and all of that is being noted. It's just making sure that that violence stems away from it, but keeping the momentum of the movement and not letting it die. Mm-hmm. That's why all of this change is happening right now. So, yeah.
Well, and I also want them coming out. I want them from the bottom of their heart to be really about the change that they want. I don't want them to do it just because they want the they want the black dollars. I want them to do it because they know somebody that's probably been affected by it, or they know someone that they want to be a part of the change.
I want the change to keep coming. If you want racism to completely, if you a white person, you sick of hearing the racist black card being played or what, and you sick of talking and having this conversation, it will continue until the last draw is struck, and that is reparation. I know this is a tough subject right here, but I'm going to leave you with this. Every single social minority group that has suffered at the hands of this country has gotten reparations. But when it comes to a black person mentioning reparations, it's like, have you guys got enough? Hell yeah, on a handout. That attitude was not put out there when those other groups paid taxes during the whole civil rights time. And that's money. You can actually research the money. So if I'm not talking about slavery. We ain't got to go back. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about civil rights time. If our grandparents pay taxes every year and they didn't get civil rights, you can look it up by the number and what this country got by the dollar, pay it back. Once these things are done, we have no more argument. You ain't got to hear from us. Then the debt is paid. So I would love for this to be the beginning, and we just work our way down to all them other things so we will have no excuse. Then it will be nothing to talk about. Nobody has nothing to say. If all that got done, what will we have to talk? Then we can actually say, but y'all got reparations. Like they want to say, but y'all got Obama.
Yeah.
Like that would be the checkmate. No more argument. I don't want to hear it.
Well, thank you guys, by the way. You know, good conversation. I think it's good just to hear why it's happening, what's happening, you know, and the effect that it has on my coworkers here. Mm-hmm. And Easy Bluegrass, Church Lady, Bella Ray, DJ Q. Thank you guys so much for being a part of this roundtable discussion on the United for Justice.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.